When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The U.S. Women's Soccer Show from Goal.
The NWSL Championship is set, and it's not exactly the matchup we had envisioned heading into this weekend's semifinals. There were not one, but two big upsets in the Pacific Northwest this weekend. First, we had the Washington Spirit continuing their incredible late-season surge as they took down OL Reign 2-1 in Washington. And then later on Sunday, the shorthanded Chicago Red Stars scored an even bigger upset by defeating the top-seeded Portland Thorns 2-0 to end Mark Parson's time in charge of the Thorns as he moves on to take over the Netherlands national team after six seasons in the Pacific Northwest. On today's episode of All of Us, the U.S. Women's Soccer Show, we're going to break down the two teams in the title game, their different roads to the showpiece event in Louisville, and we'll look ahead to the biggest game of the season. Welcome to the show. My name is Seth Vertelny, and joining me, as ever, is Goal's women's soccer correspondent, Amy Ruskai. Amy, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I am doing well. There were a couple of really interesting games that I'm looking forward to kind of diving into. I think it definitely is worth talking about the Washington Spirit as a whole and what they've been through in the last several months, because it's a story in sports unlike any that I can really remember. Everybody in the NWSL has dealt with some form of distraction or disturbances or trauma or something this season, but I think what's going on in Washington just sort of defies belief.
Yeah, and I think it's hard not to sort of celebrate as a neutral that the players have got to where they are and have got through that and they're playing in the way they are. And you know, when the players talk about the group and like the spirit in the group, it seems like, you know, over the last few months has been so positive and just sort of working with each other. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned about it's not the final that we envisaged. I know over here in the UK we love an underdog, so I think it's a really cool final. I've seen some people putting together like NWSL best 11s and have like maybe one player from each of these two teams at max, so I think that's I think it's cool. I think I'm very excited for quite an unpredictable end to the season.
Yeah, and when you look at who would be in that best 11, when you're talking about Chicago, we're not even sure if that particular player, Mallory Pugh, is going to be able to play because she was out with some COVID protocol issues, and also some of their other bigger names have been out for long spells of time, and they're not going to be back for the title game, but we'll get into that a little later. I want to start with the Spirit. They've made themselves the story in the league over the last few months. First for very negative reasons, and recently it's become kind of this classic overcoming obstacles redemption story. And I don't want to downplay the very serious issues that have happened there and still remain, but at least on the field, you know, what they've done in the last few months has kind of defied belief after everything they've gone through. I think, you know, we could spend this entire show just delving into all of the off the field issues that they've gone through in the last few months. But we have to start in August, when there was a bombshell Washington Post report that detailed then head coach Richie Burke's alleged verbal and emotional abuse of several players. Key to that story was former Spirit player Kaya McCullough going on the record. There were a couple players that spoke off the record about Richie Burke. There were a couple players who lended a quote to the story but didn't use their name. But having that former player kind of speak out and say exactly what happened to her really made a big difference. And from there, Richie Burke was suspended and Chris Ward, his assistant, was brought on an interim basis. And then eventually Burke was dismissed after a league investigation.
Yeah, and I think that the key part to that story as well is that he was initially sort of stepping aside from the role for health problems, wasn't he? And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, actually, like, this is why. Which, yeah, I mean, we've talked about what's gone on in the NWSL this season on this podcast a few times. And like I just said, I think the fact that he's kind of moved on and the players seem to be in really good spirits in the group they are now, like, you see the results, you see the togetherness. It's hard not to root for this team to do well when you know kind of what they've had to go through all year and how great they have been the last few months. And you can kind of see them playing with a smile on their face. And yeah, it's really nice to see.
Yeah, getting at the initial justification behind Burke's departure kind of brings us to another ongoing issue in the Spirit season, and that's the very public ownership battle between Steve Baldwin and his co-owner, Michelle Kang. Baldwin hired Burke 2 years ago, even though there were reports of Burke engaging in the kind of behavior he was accused of with the Spirit during his days coaching youth soccer in the Washington, D.C. area. And this was known before Burke was even brought on. And there was an outcry among some fans, among some parents of Burke's former players saying, don't hire this guy. But Baldwin and his former CEO, Larry Best, went ahead and with the hire anyway because they had a personal connection to Burke. They felt he was the right man for the job. When the information came out about what Burke had allegedly done with the Spirit, that led to kind of a fan backlash against Baldwin, the team's owner. They have been very publicly demanding that he sells. And then, you know, this got ratcheted up to a whole new level when, first of all, Kang came out with a letter to season ticket holders and investors that became public, demanding that Baldwin sell his stake in the team to her and accusing him of fostering a toxic environment in the workplace and not taking these complaints seriously. And then in an even more extraordinary development, the players themselves called on Baldwin to sell the team in an open letter. I can't remember anything like that ever happening. I can't remember the players of a team publicly demanding that one of their owners sell the team to another owner.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it goes back to what we've talked about before, that kind of, like, you know, knowing that this guy had, like, maybe wasn't the best guy in terms of, like, harbouring that toxic environment and actually appointing somebody when, you know, people have been saying, well, he's done this before, but continuing to go through with it. You know, it goes back to a lot of what we've kind of seen in the NWSL, is kind of, like, knowing something that, you know, should probably be an obstacle for not bringing somebody into a club, as they might create a toxic environment, but continuing to do it anyway. So, yeah, I mean, you just kind of, at the end of the day, the players, you know, are in their workspace and aren't in this environment that they feel, you know, happy or comfortable with, and it's such a shame. And yeah, I mean, hopefully it's been rumbling on for quite a while, but you just hope that it's something that's resolved kind of quickly, even if, you know, that might be quite optimistic. But yeah, no player should kind of go to work and think about this kind of thing. They should be able to go to training and stuff and, you know, focus on football. And, you know, a lot of that attention has been elsewhere this season, which must be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, the good news is it does seem like Chris Ward has restored a sense of stability there, and the players seem to really be responding to him. The bad news is, as you said, the ownership battle is still ongoing. It does seem like Baldwin is going to sell the team eventually, but he seems to be steadfastly against selling the team to Kang for whatever reason. There have even been reports that he's turned down a bid from Kang that's well over what the team is valued at and well over what Baldwin was even asking for. So now there's reports of other bidders coming in. And in the meantime, on the field in early September, the Spirit, when dealing with everything going on with their coaching situation, with the ownership situation, had to forfeit two consecutive games due to violating league COVID protocols. And at that point in the season, the Spirit were kind of mid-table. They were kind of fighting for a playoff position. And having two 3-0 losses without stepping on the field kind of seemed like the end of their championship push. For everything that was going on off the field, they still had a chance on the field, but that's pretty devastating when the season's in its last 2 months. And so when that happened, it was like, all right, now they... When that happened, it was like, all right, that's probably going to be the end of their season. But then they just kind of went on this remarkable run. And you know, I want to talk a little bit about what they've been doing on the field as well, since we've spent so much time detailing what's been going on off the field. First of all, they have not lost a game since Burke left the team, not including the forfeits. They've had 11 games. They've had 8 wins in those games and 3 ties. And since the 2 forfeits, they have been in even better form. And since those 2 forfeits, they've played 8 games, including the playoffs, and they've won 7 of those and tied just 1.
I think it's crazy as well. Like, we just spent a significant period of time kind of teeing up what's been going on for them this season. It sounds like you would kind of be teeing that up for, like, you know, we hear crazy, everything going crazy would sound like, oh, well, now the bottom of the table and, like, this star player's left and this has gone on. Like, the way that you tee it up like that, if you were telling somebody that didn't know the story, they'd just assume, you know, this terrible ending. The fact that you, like, that the context of their season makes what they've done to get to this point even more, like, just kind of insane, really.
Yeah, so how exactly have they done it? I think we have to start with Aubrey Bledsoe. You know, she's the 2019 goalkeeper of the year in the NWSL, and she's just really been mostly outstanding throughout this entire season. You know, she one of those players kind of on the fringe of the national team. She got called up this year for the January camp, but she got passed over for the friendlies against Australia later this month. She seems to be kind of in that group behind Alyssa Nair, kind of jockeying for position. But if she continues to play like she has been, you know, she's going to get another shot. But also there were 2 really key acquisitions in the back line ahead of this season. And those were national team veterans, Kelly O'Hara and Emily Sonnet. Along with Sam Staub, they've kind of formed a really sturdy back line that has gotten even better under Chris Ward. And now they are routinely shutting teams out or only allowing 1 goal. In fact, the last time that they allowed more than 1 goal in a game was all the way back in August.
Yeah, and I think, like, what's really nice is they have this really strong defense, but then they have this, like, in Andy Sullivan sitting just in front of it, they have this kind of glue that then links, you know, this really strong defense to the really exciting attack that they have. Like, she's not kind of like a Julie Ertz style defensive midfielder, but she has, you know, these defensive abilities, but can also then kind of playmake from deep. And I think that is to link the 2 parts, the players that I know we're definitely going to talk about in the attack to that defense that you've just mentioned. Like, it's kind of a really key thing that's helped them have such a great second half of the season, because her form in particular the second half of the season has been outstanding.
On the field and off, Andy Sullivan is kind of embodies everything that the Spirit want to be. And I think that her leadership, even though she's still a relatively young player, you know, she's a veteran of this Spirit team. She's one of their key players. She's one of their leaders. And with all the stuff going on that we mentioned off the field, you know, having somebody like Andy Sullivan there for stability, for players to look to for leadership, to organize them on the field, I don't think they would be where they are, despite the fact they have great players up and down the field. I don't think they would be where they are without Sullivan.
No, she's like the glue. She just holds everything together. And I think if you don't have that key piece to connect that defense and that attack, then yeah, it's not the same team at all.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we'll have to talk further up the field about, you know, the two players that have kind of become the standard bearers for their attack, and maybe even the standard bearers for the U.S. national team's attack moving forward, and Trinity Rodman and Ashley Sanchez. You know, they're so exciting, fun to watch, that you almost overlook a player who won the Golden Boot this year, is an MVP finalist, and just got called up to the national team again, and Ashley Hatch. But with those players forming the core of the Spirit attack, when you look at the Spirit's lineup, it's more U.S. national team players than non-national team players. And, you know, if you looked at the lineup even a year or two ago, there would be like maybe one or two fringe national team players. And now it's like, this is more U.S. national team players than non-U.S. national team players when you start, when you consider Sanchez and Rodman just got called up, but she turned down the call up. Ashley Hatch, Sullivan, O'Hara, Sonnet, Bledsoe's been there. And all of a sudden, you have this core that looks to be, you know, formidable for club and country in the years to come.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, for U.S. women's national team fans to see Rodman and Sanchez kind of like combining as they are, and then thinking about how, you know, that could transfer onto an international stage is, I mean, it's super exciting. Like, I think the crazy thing for me was kind of like the way that Rodman's kind of taken to this season has been like insane. Like we all knew she had talent. Like, people, you know, the way that she performed in the youth national teams. But then, like, to go from high school to the NWSL, the way that she's done and, like, adapted is just, like, it's crazy, like, to kind of hone that raw talent into actual, like, real consistency and at the highest level, at senior level, and just kind of constantly want to improve and see her, like, week by week, the way that she is improving, like, her finishing, her passing, her movement off the ball, like, yeah, it's kind of weird because you don't want to hype her up too much because she's, like, she's a kid, she's young. You don't want to, like, you know, this is going to be, like, the future best player in the world sort of thing. But when you watch her, you just, like, you can't help but kind of, like, hype because she is that good.
Yeah, and it's just happened so fast for her because I remember going into this season, it was legitimately a question of whether she would even get much playing time. Not because she wasn't talented, but because, as you mentioned, she skipped college entirely and she didn't have really much experience playing against top level competition. And from the very beginning of the season and the Challenge Cup, it became clear that not only was she going to play, she was going to be one of the Spirit's best players. And as the season's gone on, she's been one of the league's best players. And it's scary to think what she could be when you look at how young she is still.
All of us, the U.S. Women's Soccer Show from Goal. Get the latest news and views on the U.S. Women's National Team and the NWSL on Goal. All of us, the U.S. Women's Soccer Show from Goal. Find more U.S. Women's Soccer news and opinion on Goal.
Let's talk about the Red Stars. There are two teams in this game, and we want to talk about both of them. So, for the Spirit, winning at OL Reign was a pretty big upset. OL Reign was the home team; they were the number two seed. But the Spirit were so hot going into that game that it wasn't a huge shock. In the meantime, in Portland, the Thorns went into that game as the clear-cut favorite. They were the best team in the league. They won the Shield. And the Red Stars were missing, as we've mentioned at the top of the show, some key players long-term, like Alyssa Nair and Julie Ertz. And then you had Casey Krueger miss the game through illness. And then on top of that, you had Kayla Sharples and Mallory Pugh miss the game through COVID protocols. On top of all that, Kalia Watt goes out halfway through the first half with injury. So this is just like a really strong team normally, but so depleted. And yet they find a way to win. Immediately after Watt goes out, her replacement, Katie Johnson, scores kind of a sneaky near post goal that you wouldn't necessarily expect to go in. Second half, Sarah Waldmo scores a really nice goal from distance. Portland, you know, they controlled a lot of the possession. They had more shots on goal. But Chicago holds out and they get through with the 2-0 upset.
Yeah, and I think it's amazing that they've, you know, kind of got here considering the injuries that they've had, that you just mentioned, like, in a number of ways as well. Because, like, Alyssa Nair and Julie Ertz, they're, like, big players, not just in terms of, like, they're massive national team players that are really important, really good players. They're also players in the spine of the team. Like, you take out, you know, your goalkeeper and, you know, your six who, after the Olympics, would have gone to centre-back. Like, that's, like, you know, two massive key pieces right in the middle of the team. And to lose them with their experience and their quality, but also their leadership, is like massive. And the way that other players have stepped up with their performances, but also with their leadership, when you're missing players like that, is it's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I think there's two players that really stick out for me that have kind of stepped up in the spine of the team. First of all, you have Morgan Gautreau, who has put together an MVP caliber season, you know, a player that national team fans will have known for a long time. When she was Morgan Bryan, she was a up-and-coming young player in 2015 who kind of stepped in and took on a big role in that World Cup winning squad. She was also on the 2019 squad, had a little bit less of a role. It seems to have kind of fallen off the national team radar a little bit in recent years, but at club level, she's been one of, if not the most important players for Chicago this year, one of the biggest reasons that they're in this championship game. And she's still at a good age where I think that she is going to get another shot with the national team. And then the other player is Sarah Gordon, another one who's been kind of on the fringe of the national team in recent years, but hasn't quite made that breakthrough. But she played every minute of every game this year as a center back. And when you have that kind of stability with injuries all around, that makes such a huge difference.
Yeah. And I think, like, for Gautreau, like, I think it's been so nice to kind of see her. You can see people sort of like talking about how good she's been, and considering she's fallen off like the national team radar, or at least out of the picture a little bit in the last few years, it's just really nice to see like a player who, you know, she's obviously a great player, but maybe hasn't got the, you know, the kind of attention, or like, you know, she's been in the dark a little bit recently. So it's been really nice to kind of see her come to the fore again this year. And I know that Rory Dames has picked her out as one of those players that's been really important to filling in the sort of leadership vacuum that's been there for Nair and Ertz not being there. And then Gordon, I mean, like, especially because, you know, they've got Cassie Miller in there because Alyssa Nair's injured, to have Gordon in there providing that kind of stability, like you said, and just kind of reliability and just being absolutely brilliant in her position, has been really important to kind of protect Miller. She's been, both of them, like you say, they've been so important to the spine of the team that's been really affected by injuries.
Yeah, you know, and looking ahead to the final, you know, player for player, and based on form as well, you'd have to say the Spirit are going to be favored a little bit, especially if Sharples and Pugh are not able to return. You know, Pugh has also been one of the Red Stars' most important players this year. Rory Dames said that, as far as he knew, they were asymptomatic, and the team would like to have them for the final if they can, but that's still kind of an open question. And if they can't go, you know, that's such a huge boost to the Spirit, especially Pugh, because the Spirit's back line, as we mentioned, has been playing at such a high level recently. You know, if Chicago doesn't have one of their biggest attacking threats, you know, that's going to be a huge blow. But again, I don't think we could really underestimate Rory Dame's ability to put together a game plan that can frustrate the Spirit and that can manage to get Chicago the scoring chances they need. You know, they don't often need many, but I would have to say the Spirit are going to enter this game as a favorite. Also, Kalia Watt, I didn't mention, but we don't know her status as well, and that's another key attacking piece for Chicago.
Yeah, I think the fact that Chicago beat Portland, though, is like a massive boost. Like, you know, I mean, this, like you said, the Spirit, you know, beating the Rim was a little bit surprised, but not as much as Chicago beating Portland. I think that'll give them like a real boost. And I guess if they do go into the game as an underdog, if, you know, there's a lot of talk about the Spirit before the game and not so much about Chicago, then, you know, that might work in their favour, because, you know, it's literally what they just kind of did. They just kind of upset all the odds. And, you know, they're going to back themselves to do it again. You know, to have Pugh would be massive. It would be a huge boost because she has that ability to win games on her own. Like, she can score that decisive goal. But I think even if they're kind of missing a couple of players, they've been missing a couple of players all year. Like, I don't think it'll knock them too much. But I think, yeah, I think the Spirit probably do go into it as favourites. I think you're right.
Yeah, and that's going to be an unusual position for the Spirit to find themselves in, right? You know, they've been kind of relishing this underdog role, this us against the world role that they've been playing for the last few months with everything going on. And maybe it's going to be an unfamiliar position for them to go into a game actually expected to win. And, you know, for the Red Stars, they've made six consecutive NWSL semifinals, and now they've made two straight finals, and they have not won a championship yet. Neither have the Spirit, so we're going to have a first-time winner. But for Chicago, you know, if they don't get over the hump, it's gonna really weigh on them going to the offseason, going to the next season, because as successful as they've been to get so close every year and not win that championship is going to become more and more of a burden. So, you know, for them, this is as good of a chance as any. You know, they've already gotten past the best team in the league, and as you mentioned, you know, they're gonna have to really like their chances, even though they might enter the game as slight underdogs.
Yeah, and obviously there's a few players in that team that are kind of part of those past disappointments, so I think that's a little extra sort of fire in their belly that they have, like, to get so close in the past and yeah, like you say, go into it this year and maybe really fancy their chances. There'll be players in there completely driven by disappointment, and that could be a factor as well. But also the experience of having been in that final before is quite big. Like, you know, I'm not for a second doubting that Trinity Rodman's going to be... I'm not saying she's going to be scared and nervous and, you know, break down, but, you know, the kind of, like, experience that Chicago have in their team, that could be quite big in a final for some of the Spirit players. It's a completely new experience, and you have to factor that in because it's the biggest game of the season. Like, that could be a thing.
Saturday in Louisville, the game kicks off at noon, crucially not at 9 a.m. as it had previously been scheduled for in Portland. Thankfully, we made that change, but it should be a great game. And as mentioned, we'll end up with the first-time NWSL champion. So looking forward to that, and we will end it there. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. And as a reminder, as always, please leave us a rating, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we will chat to you all next week.
All of us, the U.S. Women's Soccer Show from Goal. Get the latest news and views on the U.S. Women's National Team and the NWSL on Goal.